Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Jai Vishnu Paramahansa Bhagavacharya Shraddha Shraddha Shri Srimad Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Maharaj ki jai. Ananta Devi Vaishnava Vrinda ki jai. Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur ki jai. Isko Bimbiti Foundracharya ki Guru Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Prem Sikho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki jai. Shishi Radha Krishna Gopa Gopina Shyama Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan ki jai. Vrindavan ki jai. Mayapur Dham ki jai. Ganga Maya Mulamaya ki jai. Harinam Sankirtan Yagya ki jai. Gaur Premanandi Hari Hari Bol. All glories to some devotees. All glories to some devotees. All glories to some devotees. All glories Shishi Guru and Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo
Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Hare Krishna. So we are reading Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 12, Chapter 3, Text 27. Prabhavanti yada sattve.
Prabhavanti yada sattve.
Mano bundi indriyani cha.
Mano bundi indriyani cha.
Tada krita yugam vidya.
Tada krita yugam vidya.
Yane tapasi yadruchi. Prabhavanti yada sattve.
Prabhavanti yada sattve.
Mano buddhi indriyani cha.
Mano buddhi indriyani cha.
Tada krita yugam vidya.
Tada krita yugam vidya.
Jnane tapasi yadruchi.
Jnane tapasi yadruchi.
Prabhavanti yada sattve. Mano buddhi indriyani cha.
Mano buddhi indriyani cha.
Tada krita yugam vidya.
Tada krita yugam vidya.
Jnane tapasi yadruchi.
Jnane tapasi yadruchi.
Prabhavanti yada sattve.
Prabhavanti yada sattve.
Mano buddhi indriyani cha.
Mano buddhi indriyani cha.
Tada krita yugam
Prabhavanti.
Prabhavanti.
They are predominantly manifest. Yada. When? Sattva.
In the mood of goodness.
Mana. The mind. Buddhi.
Intelligence.
Indriyani. Senses. Cham.
And.
Tada.
Then.
Krita Yugam, the age of Krita, Vidya, should be understood, Jnane,
in knowledge,
Tapasi,
and
austerity,
Yat,
when,
Ruchi,
pleasure. Translation and purport by disciples of His Grace Srila Prabhupada. When the mind, intelligence, and senses are solidly fixed in the mood of goodness, that time should be understood as Satya Yuga, the age of truth. People then take pleasure in knowledge and austerity. Purport. The word Krita means performed or executed. Thus, in the age of truth, all religious duties are duly performed and people take great pleasure in spiritual knowledge and austerity. Even in the Kali Yuga, those who are situated in the mood of goodness take pleasure in the cultivation of spiritual knowledge and the regulated performance of austerity. This sublime state of existence is possible for one who has conquered sex desire. Prabhavanti yada sattve manno buddhi indriyani cha tatkrit yugam mityach jnane tapasi yadruchim. When the mind, intelligence, and senses are solidly fixed in the mood of goodness, that time should be understood as Satya Yuga, the age of truth. People then take pleasure in knowledge and austerity. Om Jnana Timirandasya Gnanjana Shalakaya Chakshurin Vintam Yena Tasma Shri Gurave Namaha Vancha Kalpa Tirubhyasya Kripa Sinibhyasya Patitana Pavane Vyo Vaishnave Vyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So we have a beautiful verse this morning, which is a continuation of Bhumi Gita. As we have seen in the previous chapter, Shukadeva Goswami was narrating these stories about previous kings that were ruling in the beginning of the Kali Yuga. And he explained basically, as long as Lord Shri Krishna, the husband of the goddess of fortune, touched the earth with his lotus feet, Kali was powerless. So as long as the Lord was present on the planet, even officially it was time for age of Kali to begin, because of Lord's presence, Kali was really powerless to do anything. But once the Lord departed, then Kali took the advantage of situation. And then it's described, Mother Earth was saying, all those kings who tried to enjoy the earth by their strength were reduced by the force of time to nothing more than historical account. So nicely said. Historical accounts. And then Mother Earth is also saying, seeing the kings of this earth busy trying to conquer her, the earth herself laughed. She said, just see how these kings who are actually playthings playthings in the hands of death are desiring to conquer me. Obeys to the chorus, the earth continued as follows. She said, although in the past great men and their descendants have left me, departing from this world in the same helpless way they came into it, even today foolish men are trying to conquer me. So it's very interesting to observe that phenomenon, how strong the desire in the conditioned soul is to O Lord and enjoy separation from the Lord. And these words that Mother Bhumi is speaking, actually, they kind of remind me, we all heard the story of Alexander the Great, who was a great warrior and leader in the Greek history. So, as we know, basically, even before the age of 30, he was very, very accomplished materially. He conquered all different countries, it's explained, from the Greece all the way to India. He was ruling all that region. Just imagine, and he was barely 30 years old. And beside being very, very capable military leader, he was actually very, very intelligent. It's described that he was, in his youth, he was taught by the great Greek philosopher Aristotle. So he was very learned, actually, very, very smart. So as we know, his life unfortunately ended at a very young age. Upon conquering so many lands, at one point he was desiring to return back home to his homeland, Macedonia, as we know. And he wanted to see his mother, but he fell so ill, so sick with fever and terrible sickness, that he realized he's actually going to leave this world very soon. So he called for his generals. He called all of them as he was lying on his deathbed, practically, you know, any moment about to leave his body. And he told them, I'm desiring to see my mother, but unfortunately I don't think I will make it. And I have three final wishes to fulfill. Please listen carefully and please execute them after my death. So he said, basically, after I pass, I wish that my doctors carry my body publicly. That's my first wish. Then he said, my second wish is, along the path leading to my tomb, scatter the gold, silver, and all the jewels from my treasury, spread them all along the path leading to my tomb where my body will be placed. And then he said, my third wish, make sure my hands are kind of like lying open, not sure what the word is, kind of like just laying open out of the casket. So the generals, they were kind of like wondering, like, you know, first of all, they were, you know, heartbroken to see, you know, their leader departing in such unexpected way. So they were speechless. So finally, one of the very close associates, generals of Alexander the Great, he spoke, please explain what is the reasoning behind your wishes. And then Alexander the Great said, first of all, I want to teach all the people that no doctor can save the man from the death. No matter, you know, how capable doctors, you know, we have around us, when the time to leave this world, no one can help. So, then the second thing he said, even though I was so, so wealthy, I conquered all these countries, I have, innumerable gold and silver and jewels. Like I'm so wealthy. I want to teach people that I couldn't even take one little speck of, you know, gold with me. Like nothing. And then the last thing I want to teach people is I came into this world empty-handed and I'm leaving empty-handed. I can't carry anything with me. So I thought it really, really good lessons, because we can see so much wisdom that is actually coming from the Vedas. That and similarly, Mother Bhumi is speaking the same thing. All these rulers, they came empty-handed and they're leaving this world empty-handed. So, so that is, you know, that's been, you know, I don't know what century was that, but even at the present time, we find that even though people are desiring peace, they're desiring welfare, it is impossible without presence of the Lord, without presence of His devotees, without chanting of His holy name and His glories. Just recently, I happened to see some headline that kind of caught my attention. In Japan, there was a recently announcement that at the end of month of April, basically, the new emperor will be installed. In other words, the old emperor, who is currently 85 years old, by the way, he's kind of renouncing his post, and his son, who is about 53 years old, he's taking over. And they have a tradition, which is quite interesting, that the particular era of that emperor, they would name with certain name. So they are going to call the future era, which is coming starting May 1st, as the auspicious calm. Auspicious calm. So just imagine, you know, in other words, people are looking for the peace, they're looking for the happiness. And they found that name in some of their old poems, which obviously has some connection with, you know, Vedic culture. Auspicious and calm is only possible in the proper Vedic culture, where people are following the principles of the religion and dharmic lifestyle is present. So the other thing I noticed, it's also interesting, as we know, in the proper Vedic culture, the ruler would renounce his post at approximately the age 50, and we find many great kings like Maharaj Yudhishthira, Prithu Maharaj. They gave up the kingdom at, you know, very early age. They didn't wait till they are totally sick and like about to die to hang over the ruling of the kingdom to next generation, basically. But in the present age of Kali, as Mother Bhumi is describing, the rulers are so greedy to hold to their position, because it's so, you know, the illusion of enjoyment and thinking that I'm so powerful, I can rule the country. It's so powerful that they hold to that post till last moment of their breath. So it's interesting. In this particular case, it's said that in the last 200 years, none of the emperors did what this emperor is doing, like renouncing the post, meaning like they all waited till the moment of death. So for them, it was something new, like, you know, this poor man, like 85, you know, he was, you know, finally saying, oh, let me out, you know, I'm about to die, I can't do this anymore. So they even had to come up with a change in their constitution to change the law to allow him to renounce the post. So anyhow, that is the age of Kali. Totally opposite to that, we find examples of great, great devotees teaching us proper way to utilize the human form of life. And a particular example that comes to my mind is King Kulashekar. You probably all heard about him. What amazing Vaishnava. He wrote so many wonderful prayers to the Lord. And we have this wonderful book, Mukunda Mala Stotra, which Prabhupada commented on the first six verses, and the rest was completed by his disciples. But I like this very much, and I wanted to share with you a few of his prayers. So as far as King Kulashekar, it's described, basically he was king in the ninth century, I believe. And he was ruling what's currently known state of Kerala. He was a ruling king in a Chera dynasty of Malinadu in what is now Kerala. So it's described that it says a traditional history of King Kulashekar states that once as he slept in his palace quarters, he had a brilliant and distinct vision of Lord Krishna. Upon awaking, he fell into devotional trance and failed to notice dawn breaking. The royal musicians and ministers came as usual to his door to wake him, but after waiting some time without hearing him respond, they reluctantly took the liberty of entering his room. The king came out of his trance and described his vision to them. And from that day on, he no longer took much interest in ruling. He delegated most of his responsibilities to his ministers and dedicated himself to rendering devotional service to the Lord. So we can see what a proper example is great devotees setting up for everybody, but particularly for the rulers, people who have high positions in this world. So, like I said, he wrote really wonderful prayers that are very, very heart-touching and very deep in their meaning. So I'll just narrate two of them. In text 3, he's saying, "O Lord Mukunda, I bow down my head to your lordship and respectfully ask you to fulfill this one desire of mine, that in each of my future births, I will, by your lordship's mercy, always remember and never forget your lotus feet." So wonderful. And then the other one that I like really much, very much, which is text number 15. He's saying, "O people, please hear of this treatment for the disease of birth and death." So, disease of birth and death. He said, "It is the name of Krishna, recommended by Janavalakya and other expert yogis steeped in wisdom. This boundless, eternal inner light is the best medicine for when drunk, it bestows complete and final liberation." And then he's saying, "Just drink it." So nicely. So King Kulashekar is saying, "Just do it. Just drink the holy name, the nectar of the holy name." So, a couple months ago, I was in Mayapur, and one interesting thing happened, which I wanted to share with you. As I was standing nearby Prabhupada's Samadhi, I was just standing, and as usual, I have a tendency to drift in my thoughts. And one gentleman approached me, and first, you know, he said, "How are you feeling?" You know, and I was kind of like, you know, a little bit stunned. Usually, you know, people wouldn't approach you like that, especially, you know, strangers. So I thought, okay, maybe, you know, maybe he wants to sell me something, or he wants to take a picture, or I didn't know what he wanted. So I said, "Good, good, how are you?" So anyhow, we kind of started warming up a little bit and started conversation. And basically he said, so what you doing? And I said, oh, I'm just waiting for my wife. She's shopping for saris with my daughter. And then he said, oh, me too. And then we started both laughing. That's what, you know, a responsible husband does. So anyhow, we then had a really nice conversation. And as we were looking, there was like literally thousands of people in Mayapur at that time, just before the new year. Thousands of people. It's incredible scene how wonderful that project is developing. So as we were watching all the people and we were talking and he was asking me questions and then he said something really interesting that kind of stuck in my mind. He told me, he said, all these things have been here even before. He comes from actually very pious family, very devotional family. His father was next to him but didn't speak English. He said, I heard about Mahaprabhu, I heard about chanting Krishna's names. I heard all these things when I was kid. But now it's different. Now it's different because people are actually practicing it. And I said, yeah, that is the great glorious service that Srila Prabhupada did for all the humanity. Because all this information was present even before. People, especially in India, they heard about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they have all the scriptures, but somehow or other, due to the influence of Age of Kali, these things have been forgotten. So we were kind of discussing and we came to conclusion how important it is that each of us individually, we actually practice what Srila Prabhupada gave us. As Dravida Prabhu was explaining this Sunday, Srila Prabhupada left us amazing gifts, amazing wealth, which is much more than gold and silver. This transcendental knowledge is much, much more worth than any material wealth. But unfortunately, unless we carefully practice in our day-to-day lives, these things will be forgotten. The next generations after us, if they don't see the example that we are setting, they will eventually be influenced by the Age of Kali. So we are carrying huge responsibility to Srila Prabhupada, to previous acharyas, that we carefully practice principles that the acharyas left us in these wonderful scriptures. So, within that mind framework, I was then thinking something else, I ran upon a really, really wonderful article, which initially I didn't know who wrote it. I was reading it and I was thinking, this is so wonderful. And then I was wondering, like, who wrote this? And then I saw Vaisheshika Prabhu actually wrote this article. Really wonderful article. So what it is, a couple of weeks ago, I was a little bit just kind of looking and researching Srila Rupa Goswami's instructions. And in one of the verses of Shikshamrita, we find verse where he's saying, Srila Rupa Goswami is saying basically the essence of all instructions. I'm gonna find it for you in a second. I'm sorry?
Text eight,
that's correct. But I wanted to share with you the article that Vaisheshika Prabhu actually wrote based on that. Okay, so the article is basically based on the text number 8 from Shikshamrita, that's right. And it says, the essence of all advice is that one should utilize one's full time 24 hours a day in nicely chanting and remembering the Lord's divine name, transcendental form, qualities, and eternal pastimes, thereby gradually engaging one's tongue and mind. So, Vaisheshika Prabhu, he is speaking, he said, at one point, he arranged for a very interesting watering arrangement in his garden. So now you may wonder, like, what this has to do with, you know, philosophy? But it does. And so what happened, he describes that he found some really amazing system that it was invented in Israel. And the system, it's a watering system, basically, that waters different plants in your garden. And the hoses, they go underground to each particular plant. And at the end of each hose, it's color-coded, basically. So each hose would deliver exact specific amount of water to each plant. So, you know, it's not like, you know, you pour the same amount of water to little plant and a big plant. No, actually, each plant had very customizable amount of water, which was kind of dripping to that particular plant. So then he said, you know, that was his introduction in this article. And then he's saying, to take the advantage of Rupa Goswami's advice, progressive bhakti gardeners, which is you and me, all of us, take the time to custom design their hearing and chanting watering system. So I like that very much. Custom design their hearing and chanting watering systems. In other words, we are cultivating our bhakti kripa every day, but it has to be done really, really in attentive and very specific way, because we are all different. So I may need something, you may need, you know, like, you know, you may be inspired by a different, like, you may relish Chaitanya Charitamrita, this devotee may relish Srimad Bhagavatam, this devotee may relish Bhagavad Gita. So each of us have something unique that attracts us to Lord's lotus feet. So then he's saying, some keep diaries of their daily progress, while others meticulously plan their hearing and chanting schedules far in advance. Some daily read a set number of verses, chapters, pages, or ashtakams. Others like to perform their practices at the same time each day. When a devotee's hearing and chanting becomes an unshakable daily habit, she or he can be sure that her watering system is nicely in place. So, and then he says, bhakti gardeners who use a hearing and chanting drip system soon get intimate knowledge of Shastra, gain spiritual strength, develop unwavering faith, and become invaluable sources of shelter for others. And then he says, have you installed a spiritual drip system in your bhakti garden? So I thought this is a real wonderful article. So, Vaisheshika Prabhu ki jai. We have a few more minutes. So we have these wonderful scriptures, and if you think deeply, actually, if we absorb our mind, if we absorb our thoughts in hearing about the Lord's pastimes, then after a while, it really becomes relishable. In the beginning, like Rupa Goswami is explaining, it's like jaundice. We have no taste, like, even though, like, you know, the preparation may be sweet, but because of our sickness, our material sickness and contaminations in our heart, we can't really experience the taste of the holy name, the taste for listening about Lord's pastimes. But as we go on, basically that taste will come. Srila Prabhupada comments in our famous verse, Srinvatam Svakata Krishna Punya Shavana Kirtana Kridyanta Stohya Bhadrani Vidinoti Sukhrit Satam. So, this wonderful shloka from first canto, it's saying that Shri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, who is the Paramatma in everyone's heart and the benefactor of the truthful devotee, cleanses desire for material enjoyment from the heart of devotee who has developed what? Thank you. The urge to hear his messages, which are in themselves virtuous when properly heard and chanted. So just compare this, as we heard in the first verse of Upadeshamrita, the conditioned soul is suffering this world because what are the typical urges? Vachya vegam, manasa krodha vegam, jiva vegam, udara upastha vegam, etan vegam, yovisha heta dira, sarvam tim prithivim shishit. So the conditioned souls of this world, they are suffering because of the urges. The senses are pushing, serve me, forget the God. So the tongue, the mind, the anger, belly, they're just kind of like pulling us apart, like a wild horses. You've probably seen that picture in Bhagavad Gita. The chariot is driven by the wild horses, and each horse is trying to pull on its own direction. And the poor soul is screaming in the chariot, wondering, where it's going to end. So, but here in this verse, Shukadeva Goswami is saying, for a devotee who has developed the urge to hear about the Lord's pastimes, Krishna, as the super soul in the heart, cleanses all the contamination automatically. So Prabhupada comments on this verse, and he's saying, basically, we were discussing taste, and Prabhupada is saying, we have already discussed developing taste for hearing and chanting the holy sound. It is done through the medium of service to the pure devotee of the Lord. So, one may say, what do I do if pure devotee is not present? That's why we are so fortunate, because we can serve the mission of pure devotee. So one way or the other, we have the great opportunity to be engaged in Prabhupada's mission. And in that way, if we take part, in any capacity that we can, eventually the taste will develop in our heart. The other wonderful thing in this purport, Prabhupada is saying, the Lord is more anxious to take us back into his kingdom than we can desire. Most of us do not desire at all to go back to Godhead. Only very few men want to go back to Godhead. But anyone who desires to go back to Godhead, Sri Krishna helps in all respects. Sri Krishna Balarama Ki Jai! Thank you so much. I'll stop here. If anybody would like to comment, ask question, or offer any critics, please do so. Yes.
So, at the end of this purport, Prabhupada is saying that that this sublime state of existence is possible for one who has conquered sex desire. So, in my mind, I'm thinking that subtle sex desire, profit, adoration, and distinction, which is so insidious. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
I mean, obviously, the first, but we know so many people that have, conquered over that. But the profit, adoration, and distinction basically is saying to me that I am the enjoyer and that I'm trying to make myself separate, distinctively different than Krishna. And therefore, I'm, I'm the enjoyer. Profit means things come to me, adoration, glorify me. Those things are really difficult to conquer over. So this is a very difficult task we have. And yet, Krishna is so kind, Prabhupada is so kind, that he graciously has allowed us to have the environment to induce that type of reduction and go beyond that. So I really very much appreciated that you pointed out with the man in Mayapur that it's always been there, but Prabhupada unlocked the storage house with the guidance of Lord Chaitanya. So I really like that. And then one other point about Alexander the Great is that he was saying, no doctor can cure you, no matter how much wealth you develop, profit, you can't take it with you. And he, of course, was one of the most powerful characters in the world that we know of. He had it all. But when he left, he didn't understand that he took all of that sinful activity with him. That was one aspect. And the other aspect is that when we leave, we actually don't take those things, but we take so much of our activity, our pious and impious activity. And if we're pious, you may have a lot of money in this lifetime, and then as soon as you take an exit, you have it again. So it's, the transcendental world is very different than the material world. So I just wanted you to answer or comment that question about the subtle sex desire. You know, where is that in this particular sentence? This sublime state of existence is possible for one who has conquered sex desire.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah, definitely, like you pointed, the subtle desires are even more hard to conquer than the gross desires. But particularly here, my indication would be that sex desire basically symbolizes the passion. And as long as it's present deep in the heart, it is almost impossible for us to experience, like it's said here, yane tapasi yadruchi. So if we think like about experiencing taste in austerities and jnana, which is knowledge, that really requires sattvic level. Yeah. So as long as we are, below sattvagun, it's really hard for the ruchi taste to appear in our mind. So definitely, as that sex desire is diminishing and as our thoughts are purified, definitely the possibility of experiencing and developing the ruchi is kind of like greater and greater. And the other thing, I like what you said, not keep my mind. Oh yes. Even some philosophers, they were arguing about the third lesson of Alexander the Great. And I read one interesting comment which said, one philosopher was saying that actually the third lesson is that anything we do for ourselves in this life, basically, like achieving material success, prestige, fame, glory, basically, we have to give up at the time of death. Anything we do for others, any service we do for others, that actually remains as the eternal credit. So in that sense, any kind of like preaching activity we do, any kind of service that we do to others, basically that is the actual credit that carries on, it compounds from life to life. So I thought that's also interesting. Yes,
I was still remembering from the other class, where he was saying that there's a development of intelligence. So as you're pointing out that you can't take the wealth with you, but you do take the sinful reactions. So then when they come in contact with the karmakanda section, they start to understand that I can do things that'll take to the next life. But then that is supposed to evolve more, because even though the karmakanda is such a large part of the Vedas, ultimately, the intelligence comes to what's exemplified in the touchstone in Sanatan Goswami. That, in other words, the saintly persons, they don't consider these things of value at all. They're places of pilgrimage for crows because they don't have the conception of loving devotional service in there. So then, gradually, as you were pointing out, the profit, fame, and adoration, then these things just become like witches to beguile the living entity into falling into fruitive activities. So then the intelligence develops again to understanding it's only pure devotional service, some siddhi, hari toshnam, that is perfect.
Thank you. Yes. Pranagavinda or yes, Prabhuji.
Thank you for the very nice class, Prabhu.
Thank you.
I especially like the point about Vaisheshika Prabhu's article that you mentioned, that have we installed the spiritual drip system in our bhakti garden, so how it, how each of us are at different levels and we can make that small tweak and customize our practice.
Yes, yes, exactly, exactly. That I like that point so much, because sometimes there's a tendency to, you know, think, you know, I can do what this devotee is doing, but I may not be on that level. You know, there's still years for me to come to, you know, level of, you know, another advanced devotee. So I really have to see what, where I'm currently and how can I make progress from this point. So in that regard, this advice was very helpful.
Thank you.
Jai. Pranagavinda Prabhu. And then we will come. Yeah.
In Manasiksha of Raghunath Das Goswami, he breaks down where it's originated of this six enemy that we have: lust, anger, greed, madness, illusion, envy. So he gives that first thing happen when misuse of free will causes the apathy to devotional service. The soul is eternally positioned as a servant of Krishna, cannot be changed. But when he misuses free will, whatever the reason, we are not going there, that time he is attracted by the allure of material nature. Then the false ego is born. And Prabhupada says, false ego is a product of this world, but it's not in the world. It's before the world. Before the soul came, the false ego was there, according to Prabhupada. Very sweet. Then this separate interest, separate selfish desire is born because the knowledge of absolute is covered by illusion. Self-centeredness is born at that point, whenever it is or wherever it was. And then everything else starts, that prestige, adoration, distinction. But when to fulfill that, the lust, greed, anger, one after another started. So now the upside down to that, that when someone comes and accepts Krishna consciousness, two things he requires: subordination to a pure devotee like Prabhupada, and engage in devotional service, chanting. Then all these things, the whole degradation will disappear slowly, slowly, proportion to the surrender to Guru and serving devotions.
Thank you. Thank you. Very nice. Very nice point.
Hare Krishna. So many nice points that you made. Especially like that last quote about getting a taste for chanting the holy name by serving the devotee. And you said, but we can also serve his mission. And I was thinking of The other day I went to the St. Augustine Rathayatra, and as soon as I got, it was actually the first time I was ever there before the parade began. And so I was able to get those on chanting Hare Krishna pamphlets and a bag of cookies from Radhakund and her daughter that were on the cart. And so I kept going back. The more pamphlets and cookies passed out, then I would go back, and they always had more. And so the entire parade, I don't know how long it lasted, but I was just focused on all these new people that were hearing Krishna's holy name. So again, like the people that commented on Alexander the Great, you know, when I was thinking of doing for the others, it was fine. Only as soon as we got to the park and the parade had ended, suddenly I became aware of my feet were so painful.
Oh no.
So just see, I mean, it, you know, on a very low level, but still, it took me away from the bodily concept for that period of time while I was directly doing that preaching assisting.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. Yes, Mataji.
It's not enlightening. So that's why we became devotees, actually, by being engaged in devotional service. We didn't know a lot about Krishna consciousness or the goal of life. So basically, I believe personally that by giving the opportunity to conditioned souls, the less unfortunate individual people, it gives us the opportunity to advance and experience, you know, another Buddhivardhanam. I'm very thrilled by your class, basically, because very, very nice, with ample examples, very methodically brought up to the point. So I could fix my mind a little better today. Thank you very much. And it makes sense what you're saying, because you initiate the conversation about Alexander the Greatest and Mother Earth, how, and came to my mind because I came from this part of the world of the Greek philosophy, and I studied Aristotle. So basically there is the famous saying that in Greek says, Andron Epiphanon, Pasa Gitaphos, means glorious and famous men, all lands are hosting them. All lands are like samadhi. And so Mother and those philosophies is just Vedic philosophy, basically. It's in the Vedas, and seven canto, I believe I read a lot about the different. And make us faithful, give us the strength and knowledge to understand the and case us a little faith on the holy name and the philosophy. And what we're going through today is just the practice of Krishna consciousness. And thank you very much for all the commenters, Madan Mohan, great points. I have to ask me in private all the explanations.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna.
Jai.
I just wanted to comment about the parade, also the Rathayatra in St. Augustine, because I'm ecstatic. I just came back after being gone since 2005. So I'm blown away by everything that's going on. And what was to me was so wonderful, I got a ride. I didn't have a ride. I was in total anxiety. I mean, I know everybody knows. I was asking everyone. So I ended up with two wonderful rides, and I got to go early, like you. And it was so incredible getting there. They were decorating the car. And Prabhupada, I want to know who I saw him from a distance. They let us put Prabhupada on the intercom. When I got out of the car, we heard Prabhupada throughout the entire park. It was so incredible. I said, this is it. So thank you, St. Augustine, if you're listening. Hare Krishna.
Jai, Hare Bol. Yeah, it's very nice. A few of you mentioned Rathayatra in St. Augustine. And one thing I was thinking, actually, when we are there in public, you really don't know who around is, who are these people. I was kind of standing around after the kirtan, and one man approached me, and You know, I would have no clue who he was, or, you know, by the way he was looking. And then we started talking, and then he told me he was actually initiated back in 1980 in Philippines. Just imagine that, like, he lives now in Jacksonville with the family. He told me, unfortunately, he deviated over the years and kind of like distanced himself. But he was just happened to be in the Saint Augustine that particular afternoon, and he saw Lord Jagannath. And asked him, "Oh, why don't you take some prasad?" He said, "Oh yeah, I went immediately." He said, "Like, you know, it's like bees attracted to honey." Sorry, you know. He said, "Like, but you could see even after so many years, he's devotee in a heart." And I told him, "You know, please, you know, feel free to come to our temple in Alachua. We are so close anytime, and you know, don't worry. You know, we are all family." So it's really wonderful. There's so many people out there. Some have heard about Krishna consciousness, some have not. But we really don't know who these people are. And, you know, it's really Krishna that's controlling everything. You know, you may be on the street and you give that brochure to someone, and that person may next, you know, month turn to be a devotee in a temple. We really don't know when it's time for that jiva to surrender. So, but it's a wonderful, wonderful to be part of this mission. Thank you so much. We'll stop here. Garantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.